back in the day, you know, main dining room people would enjoy some of this. That was cut as part of the pandemic. But, you know, it's fun to see that, or it's good to see that corporations like Royal Caribbean realizing that they got to put some of it back in. You know, they can't just cut and make the experience unmemorable for customers. Again, kind of a theme here. Let's put our best foot forward early and set the tone and get people excited about what they're about to enter into. And what better way to do that than having your first meal, which for the majority of guests this trip is going to be the buffet.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we head back to the high seas and we talk about not one, but two different cruises. Tom, as always, it's a pleasure to be on a podcast with you. Are you excited about talking about two different cruises?
I am. We managed to go a couple episodes without cruising. Some of our audience is probably like, oh man, another cruise episode. And some people are going to be like, oh yes, a new cruising episode. What do you think? Do you think cruising is pretty divisive in the miles and points hobby?
I think it's a lot less divisive since the all of those status matches that led to free cruises. I really think that those status matches, like the casino matches that gave you, you know, the MSC cruise or the Carnival free cruise, I think those really exposed a lot of us to cruising far more. And some of us continue to like it, right? I mean, I know you were cruising before even those matches.
Well, I mean, they were on comped cruises. I mean, I must say I do enjoy the complimentary variety that are being provided by the casinos. In full disclosure, that's exactly what the two cruises that we are about to talk about originated from. These were both complimentary cruises earned through gambling.
And gambling we did on board.
Oh, we did. We did. Dare I say that somebody on this podcast actually did more gambling than I did?
That doesn't happen often.
No. Well, I was on a bit of a bad luck streak, and I think I jinxed myself because I was kind of looking at my win-loss statement from the last year. Because interestingly enough, Royal Caribbean has made that available online now, so you can see it very easily. What used to be, you had to actually like send them like a certified letter or made some really, you know, draconian procedure to get it. Now it's like easy peasy, and yeah, and I looked and I was like, oh, I really didn't lose that much money last year gambling on Royal Caribbean.
I'm scared to look at mine. I'm just going to say it there. I'm just going to leave it there and ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss. Gambling gods giveth and they taketh away. So, you know, there is a bit of volatility and a bit of luck involved in gambling, believe it or not.
But before we dive into the gambling gods giveth, you know, AKA our two free cruises, I think we wanted to take a little bit of time just to talk about getting there, because I know that a lot of ear ops happen domestically, right? I don't travel as much domestically as you do, but it just felt like this particular weekend. And oh, by the way, it was also Daytona 500 weekend that everybody's flying into Orlando or Jacksonville. I think we went into Jacksonville, you guys went into Orlando, and every single flight down that we had changed. Was canceled, except for the ones that we finally
got on. Not an exaggeration. Yeah, not an exaggeration. That's incredible how not a single flight left on time. And I feel like this is another set of gods. I think you clearly have the gambling gods and you have some airplane gods too. And they had they were wrathful that weekend, weren't they?
So the night before, and I think I flew down on Saturday. Okay. We'll figure. I'm fairly certain I flew down on a Saturday because I flew the day before you guys did. And Friday night, I get a notification 12 hours before our flight that our nonstop flight down to Jacksonville from Reagan National, which we've flown a number of times, was canceled. And that they were kind enough to rebook us on a nonstop at 8 p.m., thus ruining a opportunity for us to see my folks and to actually have a nice day in Florida.
Yes.
And I go back and forth. I don't even bother calling. I just go back and forth with the Twitter team. And I said to them, I said, okay, I'm close to BWI. Just get me on these flights. I'll connect through Charlotte. Gave them the flights. And so I effectively had first class awards on Alaska or with Alaska Miles, as one does. And we ended up sitting flying from BWI to Charlotte in the last possible seat of like an A321. Like, couldn't have been farther back. The flight attendant took pity on us and actually gave us beverages when they didn't actually do beverage service for the cabin because of the turbulence, because we were so far back. The reality is we made it to Jacksonville probably about five, six hours after we were planning. So we missed out on a nice lunch with the parents, but we still got to see them. And that was the important thing.
I remember you communicating about all these IROPS you were dealing with, and I was looking at my flights, and I was like, I was blissfully like, oh, everything's on time. Nothing's going to go wrong. Boy, was I wrong. Boy, was that naive of me.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny because you were flying Frontier, yes, if I recall.
Okay. So first off, yeah, I probably should have known better. In fact, I think earlier in the week, I had been listening to Ed Pizza and Richard Kerr on their podcast, regaling me with their experience, or at least Mr. Kerr's experience on Frontier, flying to Orlando, no less. I effectively got Kerr'd, I think, is what I'm going to go ahead and say, because he set the example. Once again, both of us flying Frontier, both booked with previous elite status on Frontier, being very excited because, you know, I still had my preferred seat and check bags and all the, you know, the little things that you have when you have Frontier elite status, which had expired at the beginning of the year. And I thought blissfully, you know, ignorant, oh, everything's going to be fine. And I'm going to have my, you know, preferred seating, and I'm going to have the bags that I need, and no problem. Direct flight to Orlando. And it was a cheap, cheap flight. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
At least they gave you enough notice.
They did give me some notice. So I think I found out that it was delayed or essentially canceled the morning of the flight. And it was an evening flight. So yeah, so I guess I did get a fair amount of notice.
But was that the Flighty app that informed you, or was that Frontier?
Because
I remember there was some discrepancy where one was saying everything's on time, yes, and the other was saying, yeah, you're done.
And you know what? That is the funny part. It's the paid Flighty app that was wrong. You know, it was Frontier that was emailing and said, we are sorry, your flight is canceled. And of course, this being Frontier, they service the great, you know, Orlando airport from Dulles all of once per day. So they would happily get me on the flight tomorrow, which obviously would not be in time for us to get on our cruise. So it then was obviously a mad dash to throughout another flight, which I looked on. I was like, oh, there's an Alaska. We'll go on Alaska Air. So, oh, there's an American flight direct from National Airport. Okay, this is not going to be so bad. I'll just book this instead. You know, just as you said, the wonderful, you know, 4,500 miles or 7,000 miles, I forget what it is, down to, you know, short distance Alaska Airlines award. I'll pay this. We'll get on. No problem. Not 10 minutes after booking that flight did I get a notification. Flight's delayed.
And as you're doing this, I'm driving down from St. Augustine with the family to Orlando. And my daughter's just chilling in the back, and my wife is looking for flights. Like she and I are talking through, and I'm like, okay, he's looking at American. I don't trust it. Let's look at United. Let's look at JetBlue. So you book the American flight, and about that time, we had found a United flight, and I said, hey, I think this is the flight for you. And you're like, oh no, I found a flight via Miami. To which I asked my wife to send you a screenshot of the weather app of all the weather that was heading its way down to Miami.
It might have been direct to Orlando, but yes, I don't think I had fully absorbed how windy it was at the time.
Well, no. So after you're direct to Orlando, your alternative was something.
Oh, maybe like that was my alternative.
45 minutes later.
Right.
That went via Miami.
Okay.
Because I remember there was a big front that was coming across the peninsula. Actually, we left early from my folks' house to make sure that we got to Orlando before all that, and also to try to get it without getting involved in the whole Daytona 500 traffic, because you got to drive through there on 95 and 4. And so, at some point on that drive, between all the different flights that were getting canceled, I asked my wife to just go ahead and book you guys because we had all your information
bit of panic, because you know the minute I saw that my American flight was delayed, I was like, oh, maybe I better check out that United flight that Trevor mentioned. And I look and the seats are gone. And I'm like, airline gods, you have once again foiled me. Oh my God. That was
We just proactively did it because the cancellation policy is so easy on United. And I'm like, I got the miles there. Let's just do the right thing.
Which I was very grateful for. I mean, you really did kind of swoop in there. And that was actually a little bit earlier. I think that was like a 3 p.m. flight instead of like the 7 or 8 p.m. flights that I was looking at. And obviously, if that flight for some reason went sideways, at least I'd have some ability to correct, or at least I didn't cancel any of the other flights until I was safely ensconced in my seat on this United. I think it was like a 737 or something, leaving from Dulles. And I was very, very thankful to have a great friend like Trevor and a great friend like Rose, because they had clearly done the right thing for me, not knowing that I didn't know what the right thing was.
Sometimes friends are, you need friends to show you the way, right?
You do. You do.
As you often do.
Well, it is a two-way street. I mean, that is why having friends is great. Cause you know, it's funny, everybody's got their own point of view, and sometimes you have to get there. You know, sometimes you have to get to the place the other people are. And you guys, having just had all your ear ups, were probably in the better mindset. I was in the more laissez-faire, you know, kind of it'll be what it'll be kind of. And then not a good posture when you're going to go on a cruise and that ship is going to leave with or without you.
Not only that, but this was only a 4-day cruise.
Oh, it really was. Not a lot of recovery. So
if you miss the first day, then you're trying to find a flight to the Bahamas, and it's one thing after another. So we took the safe option. We got you there, and everything worked out. So you had found this ship, and there's a couple of special things about this particular ship, and I'm talking about a Royal Caribbean ship. Why don't you introduce it?
Sure. I think I was very excited to get on this. So this is Utopia of the Seas. Let's not add any more suspense. That's the ship. It's actually it is the newest ship as of this recording for Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. It is the latest of their Oasis class ships. I don't believe it is the largest ship in the world, but it is the largest Oasis class ship in the world and the newest. And the interesting thing about it is Royal Caribbean has deployed this ship specifically for shorter cruises, for 4-night cruises and 3-night cruises, which is one of the first times they're really focusing on this. A lot of times, I think in the past, cruise lines would kind of save a little bit older ship for 3-night and 4-night sailings. And I think what they've done is they said, oh, no. We're going to put our best foot forward, especially because, you know, 3-night and 4-night cruises, these are going to be younger cruisers. These are going to be people who are maybe new to cruising or their first time on Royal Caribbean. They're giving it a shot. They're trying it out. And what they really have done from a business standpoint is kind of, I think, genius, because I think they're realizing that there's real money in this type of sailor. They have not tried everything. They don't know what they're doing. And a lot of times these customers are going to be spending more money because they're trying a lot of things. Whereas some of us, let us say more seasoned cruisers who've done this more often are, we've tried a lot of things and we probably won't spend money on certain things because we don't feel like we're getting value out of it. So I would say in some ways this is probably a very smart business decision. And I also suspect that putting their best product out there, their newest ship with all the newest bells and whistles and restaurants, they are converting a lot more who may not have been, you know, looking at cruises to be a regular thing where they're giving it a shot. They're testing the waters. But after testing the water, a lot of these people, I think, are going to be coming back. They're going to be converted as, you know, regular customers of cruising.
You know, one thing that really jumped out at me is because it's such a big ship, it's the newest ship, as you said, there is so much to do. And we'll get into details here, but there's an ice show. There's an aqua show. They have two different shows in the main theater. They have, you know, 3 or 4 slides. They've got all these different experiences. You can't do it all in 4 days or even the 3-day cruise that they do. And so that almost, you're getting off and you're feeling like you're left wanting another cruise. You're still hungry. It's not 7 days and you're like, oh, this was really nice, a really nice break. I'm ready to go home. Maybe I'll do another one of these someday. This is, wow, we just had this great time and we gotta get more of it.
Like any good drug dealer, they left you wanting more.
Exactly.
Not that I want to necessarily, I guess, relate Royal Caribbean to a drug dealer, but you know, they clearly wanted to leave you not feeling fully, fully complete in terms of exploring this very large ship with all its amenities.
Let's dive into the cruise. We'll move some things around. We split up on embarkation day for lunch. We were traveling with a fairly sizable group, I think, right? We had, four plus, I think we had seven people.
It was great because, you know, it was kind of the largest, I think this was the largest group of people we've had together that I can think of, at least that we've been on. There might have been one other cruise somewhere, but I had myself and my parents. I think we had your family plus your mother-in-law, right?
Yeah, her first cruise.
Yeah. And then we had two of my friends, Eileen and Dion. So that's up to nine. Isn't that nine?
Yeah. Yeah, that's nine.
And
that's
had a lot of cabins. I think we had like four cabins to in our party.
I thought we had five.
Or maybe we had five. One, yeah, two. Because yeah. And you're right. We had five cabins, and which presented an interesting dilemma, or at least a problem, because on embarkation day, you know, I wrangled up all the sea pass cards, all the keys to the rooms, and we're like, yeah. So we had booked it a certain way because obviously with these casino comp cruises, just some inside baseball for the listeners. You know, it's usually with a gambler that these offers are for, and they have to sail, right? So usually what happens is you have the sailor and then the gambler, and then you have one guest. And so basically what we had was all the people who had been given free cruises, which was people like myself, my mom, my dad, my friend did Eileen, my friend Dion, you know, those were the five cabins, right? And then we had to basically put one of each of Trevor's family in each of the rooms. So we were all mixed up, right? So we had like, you know, Trevor was in one room, his wife was in another room. I had in my room. I had, you know, your mother-in-law I forget what room she was in. She was probably in Dion's room or something like that. And we had to then obviously rearrange all of the peoples to actually be in the actual rooms that we wanted to put it. And the other thing we didn't quite know where these rooms were, because the map that's available sometimes is not super accurate, or it's a little confusing. So after finally getting on board and seeing where all these rooms were, we kind of made some decisions about where to put things. And so we went straight to guest services and waited in the, unfortunately, somewhat long line, and then waited even longer because it took a while, because they have to basically rekey five rooms worth of people. And just so you know, you can do that. You know, you can book it that way. And then once you're on board, they don't really care. You know, so you are actually able to, I mean, there's obviously some rules. If you have minors, you can't just have a room with minors in it. You know, you got to have, you know, parents close by, at least, you know, connecting or across the hallway or something. But other than, you know, trying to enforce those rules, they're generally very good about just moving people around once you have the rooms.
After all that pain, everything was just so simple afterwards, which was really nice. I mean, we didn't have another care. We had established all the cards that needed to be on the different accounts or the rooms, and everything just worked, which was, you know, that's
actually
one
kind
of the things
amazing.
That Royal is.
Yeah.
Royal's really good at that. Although we did feel like we had our private concierge or private
genie?
Private genie. Yeah,
that was our little joke. Yeah. I'll say something. You know, this was Trevor's mother-in-law's first cruise, and it's our first cruise together in a good amount of time. I mean, we've done it before, but I think it was probably at least a year ago, right, that we did this.
Almost. It was just under a year because we had done a March cruise on the Anthem the year before.
And I just, you know, I also know that Trevor's daughter was going to really enjoy some of the entertainment on this. And I just really, I wanted more than anything to make sure that this thing was special. So we went through a couple of hoops to make sure that we got seats at the right shows at the right time. And that included going down to our concierge at the lounge for Diamond members. So if you do have cruise loyalty, you'll have access to some of these lounges where they have some staff members can maybe do a little bit more than what you can do on your own or just through guest services or through the box office. So they managed to kind of, I guess, negotiate for some better times for some of our shows. We all had all the late showings for both the Ice Show and the Aqua Show. And I think they were able to essentially get enough of us situated to the earlier show that we could at least go down, get awesome seats. And if anybody who didn't have tickets, you know, they could just kind of get in the standby line and show up later. Which they did, which worked out perfectly. We got excellent seats at the right time for both the Ice Show and the Aqua Show, and I think it worked out amazing.
I couldn't agree more. The Ice Show, and I can't remember what the name of the Ice Show was, but it was really fantastic. It was probably the best Ice Show that I've seen. Maybe not the most technically challenging, ice show, and I am not a I'm not that big into ice shows. I mean, we enjoy them, but I don't think I could. I don't know the different moves that they do. I can just sort of tell if something looks really, really hard or not. Just, you know, I think any of us can. You know, you watch the Olympics every 4 years. But they did some really great things, and they were really engaging. And I feel more and more like this ship was very oriented toward our age group, some of the musical choices and that sort of thing. But the thing the ice show did really, really nice, I thought, it was exactly because of you. As we were right along the side, we were right first row. My daughter, probably two or three times, was on the edge of her seat so much watching this show, just joy on her face, that she fell out of her chair. And there were some times where, like, the skaters come close, they kind of come over the railing, and you get a little excitement, like, you know, you're more than just, you know, a spectator. And I thought that was really, really special. And she talked about that. I bet if I brought up the cruise even many weeks later, that she would really, really remember fondly that ice show.
I think anybody with young kids, get there early. Get to the ice shows, you know, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes early. If you've got a reservation, get that first row, because it's key, I think, to the enjoyment for the young people and for the old people too. I liked it as well. I just really love it when, you know, you've got kind of younger ones, and you can just, it just adds to the enjoyment, just seeing their faces light up and just enjoying the entertainment so much. And I agree, this ice show, like, I don't think it had the most technically, like, amazing trick skating, or it didn't have, like, drones flying everywhere, or, you know, other things that we've seen on maybe other ships. But the music choice, the choreography, and just the overall entertainment value of this one, very good. Very, very good. It was one of the best, like you said, one of the best ones at sea.
So let's shift gears to the Aqua Show. The Oasis class ship is the only ship in the, or maybe Icon has it too. I don't know.
Yeah, Icon has a different part of the ship, but yes, the Icon and the Oasis are the only ones with these Aqua Shows.
And so here we are in the stern of the ship, the back for those non-nautical, and they've got this beautiful, you know, Aqua, I don't know what you'd call
theater.
It. Theater. Yeah. Aqua theater. And you were able to get us straight middle seats, which was amazing.
I will say one of my superpowers is I have taken a lot of cruises. As people in the Points and Miles community, you understand something about loyalty, right? And this is kind of the interesting about cruise loyalty. Number one, it's lifetime loyalty, right? It's not like you have to renew this loyalty every year. It's as you cruise and you accumulate points mainly through, you know, how many nights you are at sea. You get different levels of loyalty. And one of them, once you get to Diamond Plus, which is, you know, a fairly high up there level of loyalty. I think, I forget exactly how many points it is, but it's up there past 170 or something, I think. Meaning that you would have had to spend 170 nights on cruising or done solo cruising or cruising in suites to be able to get there. Once you get to that level, one of the benefits is you get preferred seating, you know, just as you would on an airline, right? So I guess this shouldn't be that foreign a concept, but preferred seating at some of the entertainment.
Yeah. And I have to say that main cabin extra was wonderfully placed and felt like it was the right amount of, you know, close to the stage, but not so close that you're getting wet. But this show was interesting. My family's only seen two shows, and this one had a lot more dancing, I thought. But again, the music was almost spot on. You really feel targeted.
You kind of are the target demographic. I think your generation, maybe slightly, you are slightly younger than me. So I think maybe I'm kind of the tail end of the previous generation. But I think you are, you know, where the marketers want to market to, I would imagine.
Yeah. So what do you think? What did you think of the show, the Aqua Show?
I thought it was extremely good. Like you said, the music was excellent. I think it was an 80s themed, if I remember correctly, music. Because I remember a lot of, like, you know, Phil Collins and other type of music from the 80s, Michael Jackson, that kind of stuff. And you're right. I think back in the day, you know, you'd see a lot more like 70s and disco and stuff, even maybe older than that, Beatles, that kind of music. And this clearly is more toward it hits from the 80s and maybe early 90s.
And they did have a mix of dives. I felt like they had some reasonable up top dives, but again, they had a lot of dancers. In fact, for the high dives, I thought they actually had the dancers like that were like they were secured. They had safety harnesses. They were doing performance up at that same level as the or maybe a little bit lower as that high dive. So it really seemed like it was, you know, a much more well-rounded theatrical type experience. It wasn't just diving and then the high wire person. I don't understand why they do that. I mean, huge skill, mad props to him. Talk about an old statement or an old phrase. That's the sort of one I always kind of crane my head up and I'm like, yeah. So you're going about 30 knots out in the ocean and you're walking, I don't know, a few hundred feet up, few hundred feet over the ground. That seems like the great idea.
Well, it's, you know, it's thrilling, you know, that's kind of why they're doing it, right? You know, it's scary for most of us to look up there and, you know, just see how highly they are suspended and they're just literally walking on a high wire, right? Over pavement or, you know, whatever the deck is, you know? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there is a safety rope or something there, but I mean, it looks very perilous, but they managed to do it, you know, pretty effortlessly and clearly they do it every night and they even do it when the ship, although fortunately, I think our ship really, I guess this is a little bit of a tangent, like despite the fact that we were moving as fast as we were, being in the Caribbean and even though there might have been some wind and some other things, it was a very, very smooth ride. Like I don't remember during the performances where I felt any kind of big sways where I thought, oh, I hope they you know, could adjust with whatever just happened just then.
The Bahamas is pretty easy, I think. Last show that we did was that Name That Song in the main theater.
Name That Tune.
Name That Tune. There we go. I should have known that given it's, you know, fashioned after a show. Any thoughts on that before we move on to another part of the cruise experience?
Well, you know, I didn't necessarily have huge expectations for that because number one, it was an audience participation show, right? They had picked, you know, contestants out of the audience, but you know, however they had put that show together, they did an excellent job. Number one, the full orchestra was there, you know, the one that supports the other production shows. They had, you know, live singers and dancers. They had your cruise director was a host. Put all those kind of components together. And it really was a really, I think, compelling, you know, song and dance experience. And, you know, kind of in that game show format, you know, it wasn't just them playing recordings. They were playing live, you know, some of the snippets of the music that then, you know, they were quizzing the contestants in the game show and they were keeping it light and entertaining. So I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I'll just throw honorable mention for a part of the experience that now I feel like it's a mandatory thing, and that's the promenade parade. Is there a specific name for that? I know that each one has a little bit of a different theme, but I love the idea of being able to be on that promenade, being so close to the participants, the I don't know stage members. I don't know what the right term is.
I guess cast members of your Disney.
There you go, cast members.
I don't know if they do that on Royal Caribbean, but yeah. So especially on the Oasis class ships, you know, where they have that really broad promenade in the middle of the ship. That's kind of the shopping center, main town, you know, kind of path, right? Where you've got all the different shops and restaurants right in that middle of the ship with the, you know, fairly high, you know, ceiling, you know, about three decks worth of open space, right? And they typically do have a promenade parade. Long ago, they had to deal with DreamWorks. So it'd be like a DreamWorks kind of parade. I never sailed with Royal Caribbean when that was going on. A lot of the other ones, I think it's called like the Anchors Away promenade parade that I've seen before. This one was based on the Effectors, which is kind of their own, you know, version of like Marvel's Avengers that they use for like their live action show and for this parade. So then I guess they're basically kind of copying the intellectual property without being sued. It actually, you know, despite the fact that it was a little cheesy, it was super entertaining, super, super entertaining. I was, again, excited. Again, part of my enjoyment is when you've got, you know, little ones there, including my goddaughter this time. But, you know, I've had my nephew and, you know, some other people seeing these things through their eyes. It's really real joy. But I'll make a little small confession. I usually go to these parades even by myself sometimes because I think they're fun. And you know what the exciting thing about it is it's massive, first off, because the number of people, the entertainers, the number of dancers and participants in the parade is kind of ridiculous because it's all of the aqua show people, all of the ice show people, all of the production show people, essentially the entire entertainment cast, plus additional members of the ship staff, plus I think some of the Adventure Ocean, which is kind of the child care part of there. And in fact, some of the, I think the people who were in the Adventure Ocean program were in the parade, right? Some of the kids they were part of the parade. So the number of people it's kind of impressive to me that you get, you know, literally 100 people, you know, participating in this parade, going back and forth, you know, with lots of different props, you know, all kinds of fun little things, you know, whether they be, you know, hoverboards or, you know, dinosaur costumes or, you know, all kinds of things. It's fun. It's fun, interactive, and especially for little kids. It's really fun.
Awesome. Okay, let's jump to dining as we're talking a ton on this first cruise. We still got to get to the second.
I know. Well, that one's going to be a little bit more curtailed, and we'll explain that in a minute.
So dining on embarkation day, we did what we had all done the prior time on the Anthem, and we had a lunch that we paid for. This time we did it at, oh my God, the Mason Jar.
Yep.
And it was really a brunch type experience. It was good. I don't have as fond memories of it as I had of Jamie Oliver's on the Anthem.
Right.
But it was still the right call for the family. And the mother-in-law. She had gone with you guys for one point to the Windjammer, the buffet, and the Windjammer does a lot more seafood on day one. And she sort of pulls me aside as we're walking out, and she's like, "Well, that was nice, but I need something a little quieter."
Yes.
She just didn't, you know, because the Windjammer can be a little bit of hustle and bustle. Yes. Chaotic. But you were very intent on it.
Oh, we were.
Tell us why.
So, and this is something special because I think what I understand this, I was surprised by some of this too, because I didn't, I think, encounter some of this until more recently. But one of the things I think Royal Caribbean is doing is, especially on their new ships during their first year of service, they have something special at the buffet embarkation day. And they do a very, very expansive seafood buffet. I mean, we're talking lobster tails, we're talking, you know, jumbo gigantic shrimp, we're talking other kinds of raw seafood, or, you know, all kinds of, I think, very high expense items on the buffet. This is not just like, you know, it's not like Golden Corral or something. You know, this is really nice stuff, you know, that you would see maybe at a fancy hotel brunch or something like that.
As you're saying that, I think we've just solved the mystery of where the bottomless lobster tails on formal night has gone.
Well, and
that's where the budget went.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, that budget, you know, it used to be that back in the day, you know, main dining room people would enjoy some of this. That was cut as part of the pandemic. But, you know, it's fun to see that, or it's good to see that corporations like Royal Caribbean realizing that they got to put some of it back in. You know, they can't just cut and make the experience unmemorable for customers. Again, kind of a theme here. Let's put our best foot forward early and set the tone and get people excited about what they're about to enter into. And what better way to do that than having your first meal, which for the majority of guests, this ship is going to be the buffet, because that is the most accessible and or, you know, popular place to go have lunch. They had this very, very expensive, and I've experienced this once before on Symphony of the Seas, where they did the same thing. I don't think they do this on every ship. Not every ship, I think, can afford the budget, because this is not, I think this is a significant expense for them.
And they're doing it two times a week because they're doing a 3 and a 4 day.
That is right. So this is a significant expense for them. But this is, again, this is a way to really do surprise and delight for the customer. And I was not going to, you know, miss out. My family and myself, we tend to be a little bit more seafood forward than Trevor and his family, I think. So I think it meant more to us. So we were much more excited to do the wind. But on the flip side, I completely understand your mother-in-law's comment about getting out of the chaos, because that's a nice, I mean, it's nice to spend that money, which is not huge, because, you know, lunches are definitely the more economical and better value way to experience specialty dining on Royal Caribbean and a lot of cruise lines for that matter, because it's going to be far less than what they charge. In many cases, less than half of what they charge for dinner on the same cruise. And a lot of the menu items are the same. They just might be smaller, or they may just have a smaller selection. Having that lovely, quiet, less chaotic experience and eating, you know, very leisurely and having table service, right? You know, not having to get up and get your own food, especially, you know, so some of our elderly people with mobility issues, I see some major advantages for that. I get it.
Yeah. So start the tone off, you know, really well, I think, for the cruise with the, from a dining perspective. I think because this cruise was just so short, we don't have a whole lot of other things to talk about on dining. I mean, the majority of the dinners that we did were in the main dining room. Nice, but standard.
We had a really nice table, though. You know, we were, I feel like we were in a kind of secret section of the main dining room.
Oh, yeah. We even had the Batcave door.
There is this one room of the main dining room, almost completely separate from the rest of it. It's not this big, cavernous, multi-level dining room. This is just kind of this, I almost think that's the space where, you know, Izumi or one of the other specialty dining rooms would have been on other Oasis-class ships. But in our case, instead, it was, you know, more tables for the main dining room. And we had this lovely large table because we had a large party. View of the windows, right? So we did get an ocean view. Not directly in front, but, you know, we could definitely see out and see what was going on out on the ocean. Yeah. I mean, not much to say about it. I mean, it was, I would say, for better or for worse, Royal Caribbean is actually pretty good at delivering a standardized product, right?
Consistent.
And the bad part about that being, you know, some people could get tired of the menu, especially if you cruise too much. Because, you know, it's going to be the same French onion soup. It's going to be the same escargot. It's going to be the same, you know, prime rib or tenderloin, which is not a bad thing because they had some actual, you know, again, there's going to be different qualities of things on that menu. And I definitely think we had some excellent, I think it was tenderloin was one of them, of the items. We had some really good beef dishes that came out, which, again, I feel like they're investing in the product a little bit. They're trying to provide, you know, maybe not, you know, the highest quality, because obviously, you know, you go to the steakhouse to enjoy, you know, the USDA prime type of beef. But clearly they're providing a level that I would definitely feel comfortable, probably better than a lot of the fast casual or casual type of dining that people are used to spending $60, $100 to feed their family, you know?
Oh, it's more than 60 to 100. Okay,
very
let's... So the ports were Nassau and Perfect Day at Coco Cay. I think we've covered that on enough other podcasts that we can probably skip those. Let's talk a little bit about the casino. What I noticed on the Wonder, which was the first Oasis class that I had been able to sail with you guys on, they had the Golden Room, and that was a non-smoking area of the casino, but it lacked the casino vibe that you get with, you know, having a craps table, you know, in earshot. This one I thought was nice because they had half of the main casino was non-smoking and half was. And so you had the right vibe and somehow the smoke was never really overpowering unless you were really in the smoking section, like next to somebody that was a smoker. They still had the Golden Room, if I recall. We went in there a couple of times, but nothing terribly amazing that jumped out, I thought. Similar to the other one, other than the fact that it was no longer competing for people that, or now it was competing for people that wanted to avoid the smoke because you had that larger set in the main casino. I thought the games were really interesting, and your friends had really, really kind of turned me on to some new games and made me think differently about how I played,
right?
Probably leading to some of the doing more gambling than you.
Maybe a little bit more exuberance than usual.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was a fun time. I don't actually think I played table games this past
cruise. No. Well, you know, that's probably my influence. I think I got a little sour toward the middle of the cruise. I was like, I was kind of on a losing streak. And I think when I get on those losing streaks, I tend to sometimes shut down and saying, you know what, I've hit a limit and I'm not going to go ahead and go beyond that. And that's what I did. Hopefully that's how I keep myself out of trouble. I'm not trying to, you know, chase my losses. Yeah, I unfortunately hit a bit of bad luck where I was just putting money into machines and no money was coming back out. And so that's why I probably didn't experience as much of the casino as I might normally experience. Usually the idea with these things is, you know, you win some, you lose some, you build up a little bit of a bankroll, and then you start playing with some of the casino's money maybe for a period of time. And then you start, you know, going into your bankroll. And depending on how that goes, you know, you may hopefully leave the ship with some money left, maybe even more. Yeah, that was not the story on this one.
I felt like I started out that way, but it didn't last very long. Although
you started off on a good note. You did. Yeah, I think you had a couple of good wins. I think I witnessed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That I think that first night set me up until like the C day. That set me up for like the first two.
Yeah, you were playing with the casino's money for at least a day or two, I think.
You know. Win some, lose some. I found it enjoyable. So any final thoughts on Utopia before we shift to the Sun Princess?
Not too much. I'm just summing it up. It's an excellent ship. I think people should definitely has more. The one things we didn't experience, but our friends did, they had the Utopia Railway experience, which is basically this kind of faux rail car with all the windows being screens and basically a dinner show. It is very expensive. I think it's like, I forget, 100 and I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, it's over 100, I think.
Definitely over 100 per person. And then even more than that, because there's gratuity and other fees involved. So I definitely don't know that it is something you should do every time, but if you have any interest, you know, this is the Utopia is the only one that has it so far. I'm sure it's going to be on Star of the Seas and maybe some of the other ships as they go to dry dock. Seems very interesting. And I think my friends had a good time. They probably won't do it again. Only not because it was bad, just because I think it's a one and done kind of thing.
Well, it's so expensive. It's cost prohibitive to be.
It is cost prohibitive.
More than a.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that is one of the themes, you know, some of the upsells, you know, there are quite a few of them, and some of them are going to be quite expensive. So just, you know, budget appropriately and do lots of research, you know, and determine whether or not, you know, all these things are right for you.
Well said. Well said. Okay. So you did back-to-back cruises. And,
I did.
So we left you guys and off you went I suppose you had to drive down to Fort Lauderdale to be able to catch your Sun Princess cruise. Tell us about that experience and why you chose the Sun Princess.
Well, you know, Sun Princess, this is funny. This is fun because, you know, this trip was trying out the newest ships on two different cruise lines. So Utopia Sea is the newest ship for Royal Caribbean. Sun Princess is the newest ship for Princess Cruise Lines. It's interesting. They do share one common trait, which I think is something that I think every cruise line should adopt, especially with their larger ships. Both of these cruise lines had destination elevators. What did you think of the destination elevators?
I think they worked except for like one time that it didn't work, like where we were waiting just forever. And I found like I had to like, you know, put in our request like multiple times before we finally got it. But largely, I felt a lot better in that situation because there were a few times that I was like that we were just, you know, shoulder to shoulder with all these other people. And, you know, I know COVID's over. I still don't like to get like into really tight spaces anymore. And so I felt like the destination elevators sort of minimized that. I don't know how they do that. Like, I don't know how you figure if a party is six and one person requests an elevator, I don't know how the elevators understand all that, but it seemed to work out.
Yep. I'm not sure how they figured it out either, but and just for the listeners, when we say destination elevators, this is where the elevators, if you were to walk into them, there would be no buttons. You wouldn't be able to press your floor. You have to do that before you get on your elevator. And in fact, there are these tablets that are in the elevator lobbies where you would pick which floor you want to go to. And then you're immediately directed to elevator bank A or elevator bank E or elevator bank C. And that is where you're expected to wait for that elevator to come. And once it comes, you cannot choose at that time where you're going to go because you've already chosen. It's only going to go to the floors that it's assigned to. And what it does is it kind of cuts out all the gaming because, you know, there's a lot of people who get on elevators. We're going to go up to go down, you know, because they don't want to wait, right? And they want to make sure that they get their space on the elevator. So you have a lot of wasted kind of up and down traffic. And that's why those elevators are much more full because you either have people who get on the wrong elevator or forget to press the button or, you know, they are confused, get off at the wrong floor. You know, there are all kinds of things that people do that you cut out by doing this more modern, technologically savvy way of doing things. And for the most part, it seems to do a great job of cutting back. Probably the only time it doesn't work is when you've got, like, let's say a show emptying out. And like you said, you have too many people trying to request the same floor and the computer has a hard time figuring it out. And in some cases, what it just does is it says, I give up. I'm not going to let you do anything for a few seconds. And then once it's kind of cleared out some people, then, okay, I've got some space. I've got some bandwidth. Now I'm taking new requests. So I think that's probably what you ran into.
It wasn't one of the shows. It was actually the day we were at Coco Cay. I think a lot of people were trying to come up or maybe it was the Bahamas. I had the stroller, so it had to have been Bahamas. And, you know, a lot of people are coming back to the ship. And the way they go is they send them all up to deck three with a stroller. I go to the elevator block at deck two. And so I think I waited for probably about 5 minutes just because I think everything was saying, okay, there's a lot of people at deck three. Let's get all those people out of here as quickly as we can.
So Sun Princess, you know, again, leaving from Fort Lauderdale. By the way, there was a one night stay over. We did a quick stay at the Hyatt Centric in Fort Lauderdale, which I think is still a category 4. I hope it's staying there. I know that we just had all the award chart changes. It's an interesting and nice place to stay just because it's more in the middle of the restaurants and other things you can walk to in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Again, Sun Princess leaving from Port Everglades, Fort Lauderdale, which actually is not a horrible port. I kind of like it more than even Port Canaveral in Orlando, mainly because it's very close to the airport. So,
oh yeah, I remember that. I remember driving out of the airport and like you're going over the bridge and it's like right there. You can see the ships.
Yep. It's very close.
Very convenient.
Very convenient. Again, different kind of princess ship. It's called their Sphere class. So if you look at the kind of the middle of the ship, you see this kind of large ball in the middle of it, multi-stories. And even the front of the ship is this kind of large sphere solarium area, you know, where they have a kind of an entertainment area and in the indoor pool. So I think a lot of traditional princess cruisers are actually kind of, it's a little divisive because a lot of your longtime princess cruisers who have, again, Princess is very consistent within their ships. Even, you know, their older ships and the new ships, there's kind of a style and a way that those ships are designed that is very similar. This one doesn't follow all of those rules. It is much more modern, has quite a few more features, like the destination elevator. I don't know if everybody loves the destination elevators. I definitely did. We did have a balcony cabin, which was quite nice. A little different than the ones we had on the first Princess cruise that I had. The layout of the cabin was a little different. They didn't have a walk-in closet area, which they did in the previous cabin that I had. This one just had kind of just clothes storage on the sides and in various wall closets. Bathroom was kind of tiny, but otherwise very functional. But, you know, a really good experience. I would say that Princess is a premium line. I think that their food offerings are very good. Their entertainment, not as good as Royal Caribbean. But they're going to have a lot more live music options, I think. Better live music options. So they've got, you know, as far as, you know, piano players and musicians and such, they have a very good number of those on board. Again, their main dining room was pretty good. They do things differently on the buffet than they do on Royal Caribbean. You know, what I've seen both on Norwegian and on Princess is they're starting to do these things or they do these things where all the cutlery and all the napkins, they're at the table instead of you having to like grab them kind of from around the buffet, which I think is kind of nice because it's one less thing you have to, you know, carry, you know, as you're trying to get your food.
I mean, that classes it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think
you're not hunting.
You're not hunting for things or, you know, it's right there. And then, you know, staff are coming around seeing where there's low packages of those, you know, the set of cutlery. And they're like, okay, let me put a couple extra in here. It just works out. I think it's very convenient. I'm trying to think what else is kind of notable about these princess ships. Very large casino, not as large as what's on. And by the way, just to give some perspective, even though this is their newest ship and their largest ship, it is clearly several thousand less than what's on Utopia. You know, this is the princess ship. So it's not anywhere near that class of ship, but most princess cruisers are probably happy about that.
Yeah. I mean, Princess does go for a different demographic too.
And you're right. And one of the things that you'll notice is the demographic is very different. I think on our cruise, and it's noticeable because you're going back to back, right? Because, you know, our cruise, I think you were kind of in that cohort of demographic where there were a lot of people, you know, in kind of your age range, right? Families, you know, in their, you know, kind of maybe their 30s, 40s, you know, multi-generational. It was a very diverse and very young crowd. I will say this princess ship, like my other princess cruise, definitely skewed much older and a little bit less diverse, to be completely honest.
Did you bring the average age down by 10 years?
Maybe not for the ship wide, but in certain rooms when I would walk in, yes, absolutely.
I think I expected that. I mean, like my parents had preferred princess cruises for a period of time, primarily because of the smaller ships. And just that kind of an experience. And they've done a lot of the cruising. They won't go on a big ship like the Utopia, unfortunately. Yeah, no, I don't think I'm surprised there. I think it's interesting because, you know, these different cruise lines kind of, you know, gear toward a different demographic. Like you had that experience on Celebrity last year.
Well, I didn't do Celebrity. I did Virgin, maybe what you're thinking.
2 years ago, Celebrity.
You know, believe it or not, I started my cruising on Celebrity. But it's been about a decade since I've sailed Celebrity. I'm actually kind of wanting to get back. And
I could have swore you did Celebrity 2 years ago after we did the Wonder and you told me about how they had hot cocoa.
I might have told you about that, or maybe I observed it, but I did.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't. I wasn't actually sailing it. But yeah, and that is one thing about these. And Princess did this too. You know, Princess has their version of Coco Cay called Princess Cay, right? Another island in the Caribbean. I think inferior. Number one, it was a tender port, meaning that you get on another ship to get to the actual port, which adds a tremendous amount of queuing, lines, and waiting, you know, much more than on Coco Cay, where because it's at a pier, there really is not much of a wait to get out of security and you know, start on your way to your beach vacation. Princess Cay, you have to get a tender number, and you have to wait for your number to be called, and then you get on, and then on the way back, you have to wait in line with all the other, you know, throngs of people wanting to get on the boat. You know, you'll be handed a glass of cold water and a cold towel when you're waiting. No such amenity on Royal Caribbean when you're walking back from Coco Cay. That being said, you're usually able to grab like a tram or something, and so you're maybe not needing as much of a towel or a cold drink. To Princess Cay, you might, just because you've been waiting in line for a while.
So since we're talking about Princess Cay, let's talk about all the other ports that you did. You know, tell us about the itinerary, please.
Well, itinerary actually was not super port intensive. There were only two other ports. There was San Juan and there was St. Thomas, both places that I had been. And I will say this much, the only port that I got off at was Princess Cay, because unfortunately, and one of the reasons why this review will be a little bit shorter than most, is I felt sick and ill on this particular cruise about halfway through. And I was mostly kind of shipbound, roombound for the last half of this cruise. I did force myself. We did have one specialty dinner at a reasonably nice place. It's actually a new restaurant they only have, I think, on Sun Princess, which is called The Butcher's Block by Dario, which is a Florentine style or Tuscan style steakhouse. So a little bit different than, they actually have a traditional steakhouse as well, but this is more the Italian style, and the kind of beef being served is probably more what you'd expect to see at a Italian steakhouse or a steak place in Italy.
So more like a thinner cut, right?
And a different style of beef. You know, you're used to kind of this more marbled beef, right, in America. Strangely enough, the Europeans have a very different way to experience steak. They tend to like this more uniform red meat, you know, with a big fat cap. And that's what's served to us. I don't actually find it as good because it tends to be a little bit less tender than what we're used to. You know, we in the West have kind of gotten used to this, you know, because, you know, the reason why you have the USDA Prime and all those things, right, is we have these huge feedlots where the last couple of months of a cow's life before they're slaughtered, you know, they're kind of fattened up, right? And that's really where they're generating all of that extra marbling for you to enjoy, because, you know, all that kind of, you know, interstitial fat is what really tenderizes the meat when they're cooking. They dispense with all those at this place. The service was excellent, a different kind of style. It was interesting. I still, despite the fact that I was, you know, I could really only eat a couple of bites of every entree because I was just that kind of not in the best of shape, which I think would for you probably be very surprising for me to go to steakhouse and have, you know, a couple of bites of steak and be like, that's enough, you know?
You know you're really sick when that happens.
Yes. Yes. You knew that I was, you probably would notice that I was not, you know, at my tippy top. Yes. I wasn't able to enjoy this as much. And I got to tell you, you know, that is one of the downsides of cruising is, you know, sometimes you get hit with these sicknesses. You are in proximity to lots of people, you know. I will say, shame on me for not getting my flu shot this year and taking a cruise. That's probably my one of my bigger mistakes. And, but you know, I still enjoyed it. It's still an interesting ship to go on. I missed out on some of the things, missed out on some of the ports, although I'd been there before, San Juan and St. Thomas. But, you know, overall, I still enjoyed it.
So any other comments on the, I assume you made it to the main dining room before you fell ill.
Yes.
On the cruise. Any kind of comparisons of the main dining room on the Sun Princess compared to the Royal Caribbean, perhaps?
Yeah, you know, having experienced main dining room on Princess twice, definitely a step up from Royal Caribbean. Not on everything. Like some of the desserts, I think, can be a little hit or miss, although they can be on Royal Caribbean as well. But the entree quality in general, very good. Like, for instance, I think their French onion soup was just a skosh better than you get on Royal Caribbean. I think it's the cheese. I think they're probably more likely to use a little bit higher level Gruyere type cheese on it. And I know the one in Royal Caribbean, they're almost too generous because you just have this kind of gigantic mound of cheese on top of your French onion soup.
You almost need a knife.
You almost need a knife. They're a little bit more judicious in how they serve that up. Other than that, yeah, I think we did not have the same table and the same wait staff the entire time. We were all over the place, mainly because we were trying to attend different shows and different entertainment things, you know, different trivias, bingos, and other type of things. So we had our dining time was kind of all over the place, which was kind of nice. But, you know, pretty consistent still, the service. Very good waiters overall.
I feel like the key key difference maker for the dining is that wait staff. I mean, I think it's a really nice way to close out your day. They start to remember that you like iced tea or that you like a hot tea or that sort of thing. And I feel like if I was in a situation where I was having a different wait staff each time, it would literally feel more like if I was going to, I don't know, Outback one night, Longhorn another night sort of thing. And I don't think that gives you as, I'm not going to say luxurious, but it doesn't give you as frictionless an experience. And I have to ask, is that how it felt, as you were bouncing around?
It did. And I'll tell you another thing, the difference between Royal Caribbean and Princess. Strangely enough, I think that the staff on Princess are 100% not as engaged and enthusiastic as the Royal Caribbean people, which is kind of odd. You would think the staff on Princess's newest and best ship would be among the best and most, what do you call it, enthusiastic of the staff, you know, with the most smiles and the most happy to see you and hope you're having a good time. And except for maybe the entertainment staff, which I thought was great, you know, the people who were doing like the trivias and doing all the different dances and all these other things. A lot of the servers in the restaurants were all very, you know, they didn't look like they wanted to be there. And I never felt that way about Royal Caribbean. To a T, every person you meet. And the funny thing is they make an effort to, you know, if they see you, let's say on the buffet, because you have the same people working in the main dining room that are working on the buffet sometimes, they make it a point to wave at you and greet you and say, hey, I saw you on the buffet this morning. Or, you know, they are taking every opportunity on Royal Caribbean to engage with you and make you feel special. I think you're missing that on Princess for some reason. I don't quite get it. I don't know why. I wouldn't imagine they're paid that much differently than Royal Caribbean. I'll say maybe Royal Caribbean is, maybe you have a little bit more of the tip culture where I think, you know, at least the bar servers and stuff were more accustomed for people leaving them an extra dollar or whatever. But that also might be also the loyalty program because, you know, people like myself who have the higher levels of loyalty, we get free drinks and we typically will give them a cash tip because those complimentary drinks don't come with a gratuity automatically. But as a result, I think the servers in general are just, they tend to be a little bit more happy, I feel like, on Royal Caribbean. And I don't know if that's just because of the culture they've instilled online or on their ships, or if that's just, I don't know, if just it's just a corporate thing. You just didn't experience that on Princess.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because the waiter assistant or assistant waiter, actually, I did see her at Windjammer that one night that we went there, and she was the one who served me ice cream, and she remembered me, and she did make that extra little bit of a conversation. You know, that's just another little step, and you would think that Princess would be even more
as a premium line. Yes, you would think they would be more forward of that particular behavior, but for whatever reason, they're just not pushing it as hard, I guess. Royal Caribbean, that type of situation is happening to me all the time where I'll see the person maybe that I see in the main dining room. I'll see them in another venue somewhere and they'll be like, oh, hello, Mr. Kim. Or, you know, they'll make it a point to talk to you or, you know, they'll ask you questions like, oh, how was your day? You know, what did you go out on the port? It's almost like they have a script that they've been trained. I honestly think this is some of the training because I think they're pretty consistent in what they're asking, but they're not doing it in a disingenuous way. It's not like you feel like they're reading from a script. So however they're doing the training, they're doing a great job because it's not like they're saying, oh, Mr. Kim, how was your day? You know, did you go out and see the port? None of that. You felt like they were genuinely interested. It's funny. It's almost like having like a Lufthansa flight attendant or a Singapore flight attendant versus an American Airlines flight attendant. You know, it's very different in kind of what you see the airlines or the companies are prioritizing from their service staff.
Well, I love that analogy because that is one that our listeners will definitely understand. So let's close this out.
Yes.
Any final thoughts on, we didn't cover too much on shows or casino. Any comments you want to share on your experiences with those?
We might have some stuff for maybe a future Patreon episode. I think we're going to talk. We could talk maybe a little bit more about some of the gaming aspects and some of how. So there may be some more travel hacking type of opportunities with some of these cruises, especially if there are people in the community that are looking to, you know, maybe after having done some of these matches, which tend to be one and done, right? So a lot of times you'll get the one match and you'll take your one Carnival cruise, and then that'll kind of be it, unless you continue to gamble at a certain level that the cruise lines will appreciate and will want to invite you back. And most of the time you would mean that that is losing a lot of money for them to want you back. And in some cases it is. But realistically, there are some strategies a lot of people can take to not do that. And that's probably going to be a good topic for a future Patreon episode, don't you think, Trevor?
What a great teaser. I love that.
You see how I did that?
So well done. So well done. Okay. Well, let's see. Any final thoughts on Sun Princess before we close it out?
I think you got it. I think you got it all.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it sounds like that falling ill really detracted from your experience.
It did.
You know, sorry to hear that, but
still a beautiful ship. By the way, I'm not expecting people to not take it. The cruise on Sun Princess. I don't think anything to do with me getting ill had anything to do with Sun Princess.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, look, the reality is you were putting your fate in somebody else's hands. You take a 4-day Utopia of the Seas cruise with like 7,000 of your closest friends.
That's right.
And then
you
go on and get on another, you know, a 7-day cruise.
Yes.
I mean, you're a risk taker, my friend.
The odds makers would probably say this happening were not super low. But I will say, you know, part of it is also, you know, the other part of it was I think I was a bit burning the candle from both ends. You know, again, maybe there's too much information, but I think we were having quite a bit of work stuff and other personal stuff happening right before this. And believe me, I was so happy to go on this cruise because it was a major distraction and a major relaxation opportunity after some difficult stuff from a professional standpoint. And I'm sure, Trevor, you felt the same way.
It was a well-needed break. And
yes.
I think I pushed you a little bit hard because we would do dinner. We would do a show. I'd get my family settled. And then I'd head back out to the casino to catch up with you. And then it ended up being a late night. So I'm partly to blame.
I think you helped burn the midnight oil a little bit on that first part. And I think I was already kind of feeling a little drained at some point during the first cruise. And I think that just relayed. And I was actually feeling pretty good most of the first half of that cruise. But just at some point, you know, your body says, hey, yeah, we don't like what we're receiving right now. So we're just going to go ahead and not cooperate anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, it sounds like you still made lemonade out of lemons.
We did.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.